I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. And yes, I've got a little bit of a sniffle. I don't know if anybody has noticed. There is something going around. I've been around a bunch of people who have been sick. And I woke up Saturday morning and I felt it. It was coming. On Wednesday's health show, I will tell you the protocol I immediately launched on it upon feeling a sore throat. And I have been battling this thing. I will not let it get a hold of me. But I do sound a little stuffy. I hadn't noticed that until I put my headphones on. So anyway, that's where we are. My closest thing to a sick day in quite a while. Lots to get to today. I spent a lot of time on Saturdays looking at funny stuff. I really try to decompress during the weekend. It's actually kind of interesting. This weekend, I had a bunch of paperwork to do for stuff and some professional coursework that I needed to do, so I knew I was going to dedicate a large portion of my day to that. It was kind of an at-home work day, but it struck me on Sunday, I did not talk to another living soul all day Saturday. I usually even go to the grocery store on Saturdays. That's usually my big shopping day, but I didn't go. I had plenty of food around, and I realized I was all hands on deck to battle back this cold that's trying to get a hold of me, so I stayed at home. I did not talk to a living soul. I don't know the last day that I can say that. I actually went back and looked at my phone and said, did anybody call me yesterday? Did I call anybody? I did not talk to another living soul. But anyway, I spent a lot of time on Saturdays, particularly Saturday morning. There's a website I go to, and there's a lot of humor on there, and I love it. So my quotes of the day are a couple of funny things I ran across. This one I thought is kind of right up my alley and extremely accurate. Somebody had posted a meme. It says, how social media works. One person says, I prefer mangoes to oranges. And to that, some random person replies, so basically what you're saying is you hate oranges. You also failed to mention pineapples, bananas, and grapefruits. Educate yourself. I'm literally shaking. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the world we live in now? Another thing I've seen, it says, I identify as a conspiracy realist. My pronouns are they/lied. And then this one, I watched my dog chase his tail for 10 minutes and thought, wow, dogs are so easily entertained. Then I realized I just watched my dog chase his tail for 10 minutes. I have been kind of dancing around. I'm going to get to this. It might take a few minutes, too. I've been dancing around this Brown University. I don't even have her name pulled up. Doesn't even really matter. Nobody is aware of who she is. But there's a Brown University professor that put out a piece about a week ago now calling for pandemic amnesty. And I've been kind of dancing around it and looking it over, and I was really trying to decide how to reply to this thing. There were a couple of reasons for that. One, it was kind of convoluted of an argument or a proposal, but the tilt was basically, let's just all admit we got some stuff wrong and move on. But the real reason I probably have been trying to figure out how to really peel apart this article is that I'm a very nice guy. I actually can get over things pretty quickly with my fellow little people. Now, you hear me rage against the machine every single day here. I do not forgive and forget. But with other little people, I am a pretty forgiving guy. I remember raising my children. This was always the way my approach to them. If my children did something that was wrong, if they did something that was dangerous, I would let them have them like any parent does if you actually parent your child. And they might they might be on the receiving end of a great deal of anger, but I always made sure that after the things were said, the tears were shed, about 15 minutes later, I always made sure that I went to them and asked them what they wanted for dinner. and then maybe cracked a joke or sat down and talked to him about something completely unrelated. I want my kids to understand that it was not going to just linger, and it seems to have worked for me. So I'm somebody who can pretty easily get past something. Again, our rulers are the exception of that because they continue their abuse constantly. So I don't really hold a grudge. I don't get mad at anybody who votes differently than me. I might be at a complete loss as to why you might vote for somebody, particularly when most of these choices that people make, and I'm going to tell you, it's on both sides of the aisle, when the choices you make actually hurt yourself, I'm mystified by that, but I'm not really mad at people for that. You know, a lot of people on the right say, you know, the Democratic, a vote for a Democrat is just a vote for the party of death. All Democrats are lost. There's like the death, the left is just a culture of death. Now, I don't disagree with that, and particularly when it comes to the pro-life versus abortion issue. But I, as an observer, can we be a little bit honest here? There's many Republican candidates. If you voted for John McCain in 2008, you basically voted for Hitler. John McCain, if you stacked up all of the bodies, if you took all the statistics of all of the wars and acts of aggression and things that John McCain did, Republicans convinced you to vote for him in 2008. I was involved in the Ron Paul campaign back then when you ignored him in favor of John McCain. You voted for a culture of death on the Republican Party as well. 50 years of the drug war, 50 years of carrying water for Big Pharma. Yeah, the Republicans carry water for Big Pharma just like the Democrats do. They are the ones responsible, as I've told you multiple times, about Medicare Part D, the biggest payoff to the pharmaceutical industry. It even dwarfs what we saw over this ridiculous vaccine program. We got 60 years of Republicans flooding weapons manufacturers with your hard-earned cash to murder people halfway a world away. And now over 100 years of stealing a third of your income. Both parties do these things. But so I don't really judge anybody who voted for another party. And if you want to talk about a culture of death, that is the culture of our government, not necessarily just one party or the other. But most of my friends are conservative, so we can have debates and disagreements and agree on things, and we remain friends. I don't cut anybody off. I've made a big point about this as I watch people disassociate themselves over elections or COVID policies. Or I might not spend as much time around somebody that constantly wants to argue with me, but I'm not going to lose a friend because of a politician. But this call for amnesty has been really kind of gnawing at me. So I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and take a look at it. I'm just going to give you a few quotes from this piece. And she mentions in her piece kind of, we don't need to keep a scorecard. Well, I jotted down a few notes. I think there is a scorecard at least to be addressed here before we declare this pandemic amnesty. I'm ready to move on. I just have one condition, and I'll tell you that at the end of this next piece. Stick around.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through.
All right, so there's been a lot of talk over the past week about this Brown University professor who wrote her piece for The Atlantic saying it's time for us all just to get along. Let's just forgive and forget and move on from the pandemic. 2020 was the largest attack on the up and down the list of rights of Americans that I've ever seen. I think in modern times, I think in some places martial law might have been declared during the Civil War. We know Japanese Americans were rounded up and interred during World War II, but on a wholesale basis across the country, nothing compares to 2020 and at least the vast majority of 2021 when they started rolling out these vaccine passports. We've never seen the rights of Americans stripped from them so severely and so swiftly, probably in our nation's history. 200 plus years of history, we've never seen the federal government, local governments, petty tyrants everywhere, strip people of their rights and boss them around like we saw in 2020, 2021. And the issue to me is that if we do not recognize this fact and we do not have people who were on both sides of this understand the damage there and we leave the system in place ready to do it again, then we've got a problem. So the author of this pandemic amnesty piece just to give it a synopsis, basically she said, look, we all made some mistakes. We just need to move on. Let's just all admit that we made some mistakes and we'll go on. She says this in this piece. She says, we have to put these fights aside and declare a pandemic amnesty. We can leave out the willful purveyors of actual misinformation while forgiving the hard calls that people had no choice but to make with imperfect knowledge. And so I thought I'd take a look at what both sides did during the pandemic. She's referring to the two sides, so let's take a look at them. What I would consider my side, our side for many people, the non-hystericals. The people who are willing to accept some risk in their life but cherish their rights. Here's what we did. We asked to not have our businesses shut down and destroyed. We asked that people not be labeled non-essential. We asked that we get a choice of whether or not to wear a mask and allowed that if you wanted to wear a mask, you were perfectly within your rights to do it. We might not understand it because they've never worked for a viral respiratory infection before, but knock yourselves out. Don't force us, and particularly our children in their schools, into a mask. We just ask for that consideration that we make our own choices for ourselves and for our children. We did ask not to be fired from our jobs for not wanting to take an experimental genetic therapy. And essentially what my side, our side, the non-hysterical side did is we dared to not be afraid. And I think that's a pretty good synopsis of it. I'm on that side, so maybe I'm leaving some things out. But in a nutshell, my side, our side, really just asked to be left alone and not discriminated against. Allow me to make my own decisions. You make your own decisions. No mandates, no forcing of anything. We'll all make up our own minds. That was our side of the issue. And when it came to the choices that we made, we weren't winging it, as she kind of suggests. She has a line in this piece. She says, quote, in the face of so much uncertainty, getting something right had a hefty element of luck. No. We had experts on our side that disagreed with your experts. You told us our experts were stupid, were crazy, were dangerous. We had experts that we listened to, and now we know that our experts were dramatically better informed and honest than your experts. We had decades and sometimes hundreds of years of science on our side, but your side told us that the science was, air quotes here in the studio, evolving. You took us in this self-destructive circle to end up recognizing today the science of 2019 and previous that we were relying on the entire time, that masks don't work, that vaccines should be tested for 7 to 12 years. And now we are back to that point. We didn't take the diversion. We stuck with that well-accepted science of decades and hundreds of years. This was new, not new science. A respiratory virus is a respiratory virus. There was nothing different about this one. So it wasn't luck. We had very well-credentialed experts on our side. And we tried repeatedly to explain this to you, backed with the science of the pre-paranoia times, 2019 and before. And then this woman, this pandemic amnesty author, the Brown University professor, says, and similarly, getting something wrong wasn't a moral failing. Treating pandemic choices as a scorecard on which some people racked up more points than others is preventing us from moving forward. So I've given you the one side of the scorecard. My side, our side, the non-hysterical side, basically said, just let us make our own decisions. We're consulting with experts too. We think we know what we're dealing with. We have hundreds of years of science on masking, on vaccines. We understand the situation. Just leave us alone and let us make our decisions. That was our side's scorecard. Let's take a look at the scorecard of the other side as she mentions this. Treating pandemic choices as a scorecard on which some people racked up more points than others is preventing us from moving forward. So let's just take a quick look at that scorecard to their side, your side. You told us that we were stupid, too stupid to make our own decisions for ourselves and for our children. You called us baby killers for wanting to open schools. We were watching Sweden, who never closed a school, and their children were unmasked playing on the playgrounds every day during the time that you were freaking out here in the United States, and they suffered no ill effects from this. We noticed that. We tried to call your attention to it. You pretended it didn't exist. You terrorized innocent children, telling them that other human beings might kill them, or they might kill their parents or grandparents. You stole 2.5 years of their lives with things like senior years, senior football seasons. I was so sympathetic to these kids that were missing these milestones. No proms. Kids that rode the bench, finally got to their senior year, were going to start in some sporting thing. Years and years and years of practice, finally you're going to be the star on the field. You took that from them. It wasn't just the kids. You isolated elderly people at a time in their life when they need companionship. Elderly couples that have been together for 50, 60 years, you split them apart. You split them apart. They've lived their entire lives together. You split them apart, and many of them died of broken hearts. They wanted to be together, regardless of some bug. They just wanted to be together in their last years. You stripped them apart. And you wouldn't allow us to even go to the bedside of these elderly people. Somebody, a dying relative. And you actually would have arrested people, and I'm sure in some cases people were detained and harassed and possibly arrested for just trying to visit an ailing elderly relative. You called us murderers. You wouldn't let people get married. You arrested us for walking on the beach in the sunshine. I'm not talking about just the screaming about masking, screaming at people about social distancing, both measures that never worked. You arrested people. Cops chased people down the beach as they walked in the sunshine. You wouldn't let us eat into a restaurant, go to a movie, attend a sporting event. We're told we couldn't socialize, and if we were allowed to partially socialize, you told us how many people we could have in our living room of our own home. Your side destroyed tens of thousands of businesses, drove people to deaths of despair. You broke the labor market. You broke the supply chains. You called us unscientific idiots and refused to allow people access to wildly safe and effective drugs that they wanted to take. Drugs like ivermectin that were listed as one of the essential medications, one of the top three, I believe, top three essential medications for human beings. You told us it was cow paste. You allowed doctors and hospitals to murder people with remdesivir because they were not allowed anything but the standard protocol, and people died from that protocol. Then you started lying about the shots. You destroyed so many people economically with the lockdowns and with all of the restrictions there, and the ones you didn't destroy, you circled back around with the vaccine mandates and went ahead and finished those few people off. Strip them of their way of living to provide for their families. You tore apart these families. Disinvited us from social events. Made us outcasts, like lepers, is how you treated us. You yelled at us in grocery stores when we weren't masked, screaming hysterically at people who simply made another choice, and as it turns out now, a very well-reasoned and rational choice. The masks have never worked. You terrorized people so badly, they are still afraid. Go out in public today. Go to the grocery store today. You will still see people that are still so terrorized and afraid to go into public unless they wear the useless face diaper. They are still terrorized by that. And then you started telling us that we were going to die if we didn't take the shot. You lied about the safety, you lied about the efficacy, and for that, you ignored the safety signals. And your insistence that everybody around you take this shot that you were told, I will say you were lied to, I'll get to that in just a second. It has resulted in the thousands and thousands of deaths of moms and dads, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters who did not want to take it, but you forced them. You held their jobs hostage, besieged them with guilt. that they were going to kill those around them if they did not submit to this genetic therapy. And thousands of them have died, tens of thousands disabled. But the worst part about this, this woman who wrote this piece, and now those who want to forgive and forget, is this line right here. Moving on is crucial now because the pandemic created many problems that we still need to solve. Because what that says to me is we leave this same apparatus in. See, these people who were terrorized to make all of these horrific choices and become their own little petty tyrant authoritarians, they refuse to admit that the Faucis, that the Thomas Dobbs, that the medical establishment, that the pharmaceutical companies, that the WHO, that the CDC, that the FDA tricked them. And so they want to just move ahead, leaving all of those people in place with increased budgets and the same amount of power so that they can do it again. You refuse to hold the people who did this to you, to your mind, so that you inflicted these horrors I've listed on us. You refuse to hold them accountable at all. You still actually defend them. And then there was this. The Standard saying, this is what the author, this Brown University author said in this pandemic piece. She said, the Standard saying is that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. But dwelling on the mistakes of history can lead to a repetitive doom loop as well. Let's acknowledge that we made complicated choices in the face of deep uncertainty and then try to work together to build back and move forward. So we're not supposed to go back and look at history. This is like these politicians who say, oh, they just want to talk about the past and say, yeah, the past is your record. Exactly. That's exactly what we want to talk. We want to talk about your record. That's what the past is. And I've been searching for a comparison between these two sides that this woman wants to just come back together and, you know, with no changes whatsoever. We just agree to just drop all grievances. I was trying to think of a comparison of what this would be, and this is what I came up with. It's like you and a wife, or you and a spouse in a relationship. The other spouse has an affair. They drained your joint bank accounts. They smashed up your car with a baseball bat when they didn't get their way on something. They alienated the kids and turned them against you. For no reason except just absolute madness, instigated mistrust, and just destroyed the whole family. The other spouse, the husband, he left the toilet seat up. You destroyed the entire family, and the husband, he just left the toilet seat up. And then you want to just come to him and say, look, we can both admit we made some mistakes. I had an affair. I drained all of our accounts. I smashed up your car. I alienated the kids from you. But you have to admit, you left the toilet seat up. So let's just let bygones be bygones and just both admit that we made some mistakes. And there is just no way in the world that there is any pandemic amnesty when the people who inflicted this on all of us are still moving about with no problems. There should be Nuremberg-style trials for these people. Only that will turn the medical system to understand that the people will not put up with this kind of stuff. And if nothing else, if you don't ascribe any maliciousness to their actions, and I do, I believe Anthony Fauci is a big pharma whore and a very, 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 very disingenuous and evil man. But even if you don't subscribe to that, you must understand that everybody at the CDC, everybody at the FDA, everybody with the school, with a state medical board, every state health officer that went along with this stuff is patently unqualified to retain their positions for a minute longer. If the people on the other side want amnesty, then they need to acknowledge the fact that they were misled and the people who did the misleading can no longer occupy those seats of power. After that, I think maybe we can come to some agreement that, like I say, I'm a nice guy. I know a lot of people were terrorized. I know very good, caring people who took the side of the hysterics. And it's because they believed they were tricked by these people. tricked into taking the shot, tricked into wearing a mask, tricked into telling their children that they were going to die if they didn't go through all of the ridiculous protocols. They were tricked. But until they realize that and not get angry at those who weren't scared, that was the biggest thing. I think the biggest problem is our side just wasn't afraid enough for them. They wanted company in their paranoia. But until they acknowledge that they were tricked and demand accountability for the people that so radically misled them, there's no moving forward. Because we've got to, our side has got to try somehow to hold some of these people accountable. And apparently you have decided, your side, the hysteric side, has decided to lash yourself to these leaders and give them a pass. Admit you were tricked, admit you were duped, and call for the accountability of the people who so badly misled you. This is the most mystifying thing, the media included. The Rachel Maddows who told you, you take this shot, it stops with you. It's a dead end. You'll never get COVID. Your president, Joe Biden, who told you, you won't get COVID. You won't go to a hospital. You won't kill Nana if you get this shot. All of these people who lied to you, hold them accountable. Join us. Join us in holding these people accountable, and I bet you'll find loving arms on our side welcoming you back to sanity. I'm ready for it. But not as long as you say we leave the system in place and just agree that we both made some mistakes. You destroyed the family. We left the toilet seat up in that comparison. This was really something interesting to read. You can check it out for yourself. It is an Atlantic article. Time for pandemic amnesty. Just do a search for that and take a look at this thing. It's quite a whitewash of history. Oh, we all got a few things wrong. And those of you who do get things right, it was just sheer luck. It's really, really a very disgusting piece. I'll be right back.
Arms around me, I need to feel your touch.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. And tomorrow is midterm elections. It's going to be very interesting. I know a lot of people expecting hanky-panky. Maybe some time before we hear results so they can do their thing. Anything less than a huge red wave is going to be completely mystifying, but it won't be the first time. Here's the electoral backdrop. Now, what's always amazing is in a president's first term, they always lose people in the House and the Senate. Now, what's funny is that when it happened to Trump, everybody said, well, it just always happens. Now it's going to happen to Biden, and everyone will say it's because Biden is terrible. Now, what happens is most presidents get elected and people realize, oh, they're not going to fix anything either. And so they attempt, once again, in vain, to switch parties. Now, Joe Biden is especially horrific, and the Democratic Party is the worst it's ever been, at least in modern times, my lifetime for sure. Here's the backdrop upon which the Democrats are running to retain power. Kind of funny, this woman's first name is C-A-S-H-E. So I don't know if that's Cash or Cashy. We'll call her Cash. Cash Lewis, 31, of Denver, Colorado, works multiple jobs and is trying to find a third job due to rising shelter inflation. She told The Guardian she works 6 days a week, sometimes more than 16 hours per day, just to pay the bills. Quote, I'm exhausted all the time. On the one day I have off a week, I donate plasma for extra money. I'm literally selling my blood to eat because I have no choice. She said many of her friends and family work multiple jobs as inflation makes, quote, nothing affordable, and the roadblocks set up to keep people in the cycle of poverty benefit the most wealthy members of our society. Boy, she's right. She is so right. Lewis said, quote, we aren't living, we're barely surviving, and we have no choice but to keep doing it. This is what's going on while Joe Biden takes to the microphone to express that we had a positive GDP number. This woman's still donating blood. She doesn't care about whatever statistics these people put out there. The experience of the average American in this inflationary debt implosion is not good. Wells Fargo. What did Wells Fargo say here? Wells Fargo braces for more layoffs as loan volumes collapse 90% year over year. In the early weeks of the fourth quarter, the bank had about 18,000 loans in its pipeline. The report says this is down an astonishing 90% from a year earlier when the pandemic housing boom was in full swing. Home sellers right now are not real happy. Not real happy with the administration. And so we are just sitting, just these people are, everybody is stewing in their own juice with this inflationary background. And the Democrats are having to run on that Joy Reid. You may have already heard this. Sometimes it takes me a few days to get to something, but it is, I'm going to juxtapose this. Joy Reid came on to talk about inflation. She is the abysmal MSNBC show host. And she said this. This is one of those things, too. I've talked about most political speeches, most things I hear out of a politician's mouth. All I hear is, wah, 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 wah. You're so stupid, you'll believe this. It doesn't matter which side of the aisle, the vast majority of Republicans and Democrats are just, it's just noise, and they just assume that you will be stupid enough to believe what they're saying again this time. Joy Reid is very similar. She thinks you're really stupid.
The only people I ever hear use the word inflation are journalists and economists, right? So that is not part of the normal lexicon of the way people talk. So it's interesting.
See, this is a woman who lives in an ivory tower on her fat MSNBC salary, and she doesn't know what gas costs. She doesn't know what milk costs. I'm sure she has a full benefits package with MSNBC. She doesn't know what health insurance costs. She's ferried about the country, probably. She doesn't know what airplane tickets cost. She doesn't know what anything costs. So to her, nobody's talking about inflation because of the cocktail parties that she goes to. Nobody cares. They are the beneficiaries of this system. So they don't talk about inflation. So she doesn't think anybody ever talks about inflation.
I think that Republicans are doing something they don't normally do, right? Which is not use the common tongue, right? Not use just common English to sort of do on their campaigns like they're doing with crime. But what they've done is they've taught people the word inflation, right? Yeah.
This is how stupid she thinks people are and how out of touch she is. She thinks the American people have never really, we've never really contemplated inflation. I may have said it on 80% of the shows that I've done for the last 5.5 years, but I'm an economics weirdo nerd. But people know what inflation is. They have for quite a period of time.
Most people who would have never used that word ever in their lives are using it now because they've been taught it, including on TV, including in newspapers. They've been taught this word, and they sort of wrap this word around whatever it is that they really want to vote, the reasons they really want to vote.
I found that quite astounding. I think it is exactly that. This woman has no, they don't talk about inflation because these prices don't hurt them. And Ron Paul's going to explain it to you. This was the 2008 presidential campaign. I want you to think about this. This is in 2008. This is another one of these things that will be in the long reels of Ron Paul was right. Ron Paul tried to warn you. And it was why I was such a big fan of this man. 2008. And you should see, this is at a Republican debate. It looks like he's standing next to Mike Huckabee. These people don't want to talk about this. They don't want you to know any of the things Ron Paul is about to tell you on the stage with other Republicans.
Drugs. I think this is not a consequence of free markets. What's happening is there's transfer of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the wealthy. This comes about because of the monetary system that we have. When you inflate a currency or destroy a currency, the middle class gets wiped out. So the people who get to use the money first, which is created by the Federal Reserve System, benefit. So the money gravitates to the banks and to Wall Street. So that's why you have more billionaires than ever before. Today, this country is in the middle of a recession for a lot of people. Michigan knows about it. Poor people know about it. The middle class knows about it. Wall Street doesn't know about it. Washington, D.C. doesn't know about it, but it's because of the monetary system and the excessive spending. As long as we live beyond our means, we are destined to live beneath our means. And we have lived beyond our means because we are financing a foreign policy that is so extravagant and beyond what we can control, as well as the spending here at home. And we're depending on the creation of money out of thin air, which is nothing more than the debasement of the currency. It's counterfeit, and it is a natural, predictable consequence that you're going going to have people benefit from it and other people suffer. So if you want a healthy economy, you have to study monetary theory and figure out why it is that we're suffering, and everybody doesn't suffer equally or this wouldn't be so bad. It's always the poor people, those on retired incomes, that suffer the most. But the politicians and those who get to use the money first, like the military industrial complex, they make a lot of money and they benefit from.
Yeah. For 2008, Ron Paul's explaining to you what's going to happen in 2022. It was already starting to happen then. We know what happened in the last 14 years, the cost of health care, the cost of a home, the cost of college, all these things have been inflating. You know, and I was listening to that just then, and I thought, oh, you know, that's why Ron Paul, that was Ron Paul's problem. He said, you need to understand monetary theory. You need to understand monetary policy. And I'm looking at the stage. It looks like there's about eight of these Republicans up there. This is 2008, the year that John McCain took the nomination. And I realized that those are all the people who don't want you to know these things. There were eight people on the stage. Seven of them don't want you to know or study monetary policy. They don't want you to even hear that term. Because as Henry Ford said, if you understood the banking system, there'd be a revolution by tomorrow morning. In 2008, Ron Paul was trying to explain these things to you. And the Republicans, too, today, when we are sitting in the middle of an inflationary disaster for tens of millions of Americans, probably hundreds of millions of Americans are being hurt by this inflation right now. The Republican Party still won't explain it to you, will they? They call it Bidenflation. They don't explain to you the excesses of the last 14 years of endless money printing. They never dare mention the word Federal Reserve. Words, excuse me. I pulled a Biden, didn't I? One word, Federal Reserve. The Fed. See, the Republicans do not want you even thinking about this. They want you to believe it is one party that is responsible for the inflation. And not even that, they're trying to boil it down to one man. The brain-addled Joe Biden has unleashed this inflation on you all by himself. If we just stop him, all those Republicans on the stage, none of them will ever explain that to you, and they won't. They won't in the 2024 election either, because the Republicans love the game too. They are those politicians sitting at the trough, getting their hands on the fresh cash first when it has the most purchasing power. By the time it trickles down to us, it becomes more and more worthless. If you ever caught on to that game, you wouldn't believe them anymore. Roger Wicker doesn't want you to understand that. I'm sure he's uttered Bidenflation. I would imagine if I pulled up his website right now or any of the things he's put out, he's tried to lay blame right on this one guy and doesn't pay attention to the fact the Fed is printing up money to send to Ukraine by the tens of billions of dollars. He doesn't want you to understand that because he wants that. And if you understood it, he wouldn't get that. It would be really great. This is the Republican Party's got such a great opportunity. Should there be a red wave, and I hope there is one, to stop Joe Biden's policies, Democratic policies, I am praying for a red wave. A red tsunami to stop what it is. But they could use the next couple of years while they're in power to actually explain this to the American people. And that would be the first step towards actually fixing something. But I guarantee you they won't. I guarantee you they will not. Because the Republican Party is addicted to Fed cash just like everybody else. Be right back. All right, only a couple of minutes left in this hour. When I come back, just enough of you have encouraged me on some of the economic stuff that I continue to do it. I don't know. I'm attracting the masses. I'm not getting any sexy viral spreads with my explaining of the bond market or any of these things. But I think it's so important. And as we head into a midterm, we have been barraged with, what was the latest figure I saw? $2.7 billion in spending by the two political parties in this election cycle. And they fail to actually ever tell you anything that's actually happening. Any of the real causes of the problems that we're seeing right now. It's always other side bad. Sometimes correctly. Sometimes patent lies. But that's all it is. There's no education or understanding. And I guess I'm a kind of a revolutionary guy. I'm with Henry Ford. If people understood the banking system, there'd be a revolution tomorrow morning. Well, I am trying to convince, or not convince, it's trying to explain to people the banking system, our financial system, that monetary policy stuff that Ron Paul told you to start paying attention to in 2008. Just imagine if people had taken him up on that as we were going through the great financial crisis, the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression, and Americans were completely uninterested in exactly what led us there. It was a debt crisis. What did our politicians do? They papered over it with anyone? More debt. Significantly more debt. Both parties. All presidents. Each one worse than the one before them, regardless of party. They won't explain these things to you, so I will. I think the Fed has got a big problem, and I'm not sure how it manifests itself, but I'm going to explain to you something that's going on with the Fed's balance sheet. If you're interested in that, stick around. I'll be right back.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here broadcasting from the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. I understand preferring the Republican Party over the Democratic Party. My explanation of that, the way I look at it, is that imagine I was a business owner and I was running a profitable business, trying to provide for my family with a business. The Democratic Party breaks in the front door, attacks you physically, trashes the place, and steals all your money. The Republican Party just somehow gets into your computer system and slowly bleeds you dry. Now, both are bad, but I would prefer to not have to clean up the mess, not have to be attacked physically, hurt. So I am ready for a return to the more classy criminal class in the Republican Party as they steal wealth from the American people, but silently and behind the scenes, rather than all of the insanity that the Democratic Party brings to it, all the destruction that they bring to it. And so I understand partisanship to a degree of preferring one party over another, but partisanship destroys people's minds. The propaganda within partisanship on both sides, to me, it's something I've dedicated a good deal of my time to breaking down. There's a meme going around. And it's one of these how it started versus how it's going things between Trump's last day and Joe Biden's day today. Joe Biden is an absolute disaster as whatever, I guess, president, whatever he is. It's the White House running things, and we don't know who that is. Joe Biden is the weird thing that they've put in front of us to say things. I don't even know how to describe him at this point. But I was looking at this meme, and it goes through 8 different points of how it started versus how it's going. And I think all of these things are probably very accurate, and it's why the Democrats are set to take a prison pounding tomorrow in the midterms. But I'm going to explain the propaganda part of this, too. So it goes through several different things. It talks about in the last day of Trump's term, inflation rate was 1.4%. Today, it's 8.3%. Here's the dirty little secret. It would be basically the same under Donald Trump. See, inflation is a monetary policy thing, and Trump's monetary policy is no different than Barack Obama's or Joe Biden's. It is tell the Fed to print up a bunch of money, and you don't have to look much further than back in 2018 when the Fed did start raising rates to possibly stave off some of this inflation. Donald Trump hyperventilated and said, you gave Barack Obama zero rates, I want zero rates or negative rates. Had he gotten his wish for negative rates, inflation would have happened earlier and it would be significantly worse. So it's accurate, the inflation rate, at least as it was reported in January of 2021 when Trump left office, was only 1.4%, and today it is 8.3%. That's absolutely true. It's just that has nothing to do with either one of these men. It has to do with monetary policy. Now, this is where they get it right. And they talk about gas prices. Trump's last day, it was $2.39. Today it's $3.76. I do believe Donald Trump was very good for energy prices and would have been much, much better. But that does not stop inflation. it can mitigate the cost of all kinds of things. We know transportation costs are built into everything. But if you remember a time back after the financial crisis, we spiked to $150 a barrel. I think that was the high. I know it got up to $130, but I think it got up to $150 a barrel for gasoline. We didn't have a reported 8.3%, but what is in all actuality a 15 to 16% inflation rate then. So gas prices would probably still be at least a little higher, but Donald Trump definitely much, much, much better on energy. And that's wildly important, too. I certainly will always give him that. Here's another one. When Trump left office, mortgage rates, 30-year mortgage rate was at 2.65%. Today, 7.08%. Yeah, no duh. Because the Fed has stopped artificially suppressing interest rates. Mortgage rates had absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump and those low interest rates. That 2.65% that the Republicans are boasting about, that's what blew up the housing bubble. That's what made houses more unaffordable than at any time in human history. Well, in the United States. Human history may be an exaggeration. 30-year mortgage rates were obviously going to go up if the Fed ever raised rates. Mortgage rates were going up in 2018 when the Fed was raising interest rates during Donald Trump's term. That's a ridiculous comparison. Average rent prices when Trump left office, $1,625. Today, $2,039. Again, that is inflation. And it probably didn't help anything. I would imagine there's a lot of landlords out there trying to recoup some losses because under the Trump administration and the Biden administration, they allowed the CDC to do a moratorium. God knows where they got this power to do this. I have no earthly idea. But they allowed the CDC to issue a moratorium on evictions. It's the most egregious thing I think I've... That's one of the worst things I've ever seen the government do. How the hell does the CDC... inject themselves in the landlord-to-tenant relationship? There cannot be a legal or constitutional basis on that whatsoever, but somehow they did it. But rent increases are a product of inflation, which is a product of money policy, not what nut jobs run in the country at the time. Oh, here's one of my favorites. When Trump left, the NASDAQ was up 13,342 points. During Biden's administration, NASDAQ's down 10,829. Yes, as Trump himself said when he was campaigning in 2016, we were in the biggest stock market bubble ever. This is why I voted for Donald Trump in 2016. He went out there and said, this is a ridiculous fake economy bolstered by Fed cash. And this economy and the stock market is in a big, fat, ugly bubble. That's a direct quote from Donald Trump. He was exactly right. The only problem I didn't understand, he was going to try to inflate that bubble even more. And he did. Bubbles pop. And Biden will certainly make all of these things worse. There's no doubt about it. But this idea that somehow to compare these two presidents and act like the NASDAQ being up into bubble territory is something to hang your hat on. Grocery prices compared. That's inflation again. When Trump was leaving office, grocery prices were up 3.7%. Now they're up 13.5%. Again, this is a monetary policy phenomenon. Now, electricity, and this may be the other one. I believe Donald Trump will be better on electricity. Electricity rose 15.8% since Biden has taken office. The electricity rate increase during Trump's term was 1.5%. On the energy stuff, I give Trump all the kudos in the world. He definitely was good for our energy markets, which has a lot of positive impacts. We need good, cheap access to energy. But outside of that, what was this last one? Oh, here it is. Real average hourly earnings increased 4% under Donald Trump. For Joe Biden, they have decreased by 2.8%. Again, this is real average hourly earnings, which means it's adjusted for inflation. Inflation is high. So this is pure partisan propaganda. And it's another attempt to try to blame this one brain-addled idiot that is in the White House for all of these terrible things and give credit for Donald Trump. Why would Donald Trump get credit for 2.65% interest rates? Why would you even want him to get credit for that on homes? Because that blew up the housing bubble. It has got people trapped in homes right now. Trapped in homes they will not be able to sell possibly for years and years. We will have another housing crisis. People will lose their homes. They will turn in their keys when they start losing jobs, when we start to see the unemployment rate rise. And it is that 2.65% mortgage rate when Trump left office that led to this. The fact that people can't see this is kind of frustrating to me, as you might be able to tell. I'll be right back.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
So tomorrow, midterms, I have to say, that video of Fetterman in Pennsylvania, the, I mean, accurately described brain-damaged Democratic Senate candidate they've got up there, the video of him starting off his speech as the wind blew down all the American flags behind him, it was beautiful. I mean, that is just, you know, every now and then we get a sign, and that was one of them. What is going on in Pennsylvania? Kind of feel like, you know, a lot of history up in Pennsylvania. You can feel like there should be a somewhat sophisticated state. Not so much, apparently. This Fetterman guy, if it's at all true that he is running bloated neck to neck with Dr. Oz up there. But we'll see. Here's the problem the Republicans have, and I'm not sure how this plays out. I haven't really thought about it long term. Here's the problem. Should the GOP win, and we see this red wave, and I hope there is one, it should be massive. It should be a tsunami. It should be a repudiation of everything the Democratic Party has done for the last 10 years. Now, will it make them pause and reflect on some of their insanity? They did try to do a reverse on defund the police in pretty quick order as crime skyrocketed. But they're not good about learning from their mistakes. They will seek to, like they did when Hillary lost, they'll seek to blame somebody else. They're not good at self-examination on the left for the last 10 years. So, but I would like to see a complete repudiation. Many good thinking Democrats, they're not on that plantation any longer. And I think that they will vote for some level of sanity to return. The white class crime of the Republican Party, so much better than the chaos and violence of the left wing crime. Anyway, here's the problem for the GOP. Should they have this red tsunami tomorrow, they can't stop the economic crisis that's coming. Now, Biden or whatever Democrat steps in when he's taken out, and I'm starting to wonder if maybe after the midterm, seems like maybe they should have made the move before the midterms. He's certainly not adding anything to it, but I just get the feeling he's on his last legs. Of course, I thought he was going to be taken out this past May, so I don't know. Whoever the president is, just like I read to you, Republicans and Democrats both always say the face of the country, the president, is the one responsible for these economic things. If they're good, it's all the president's doing. If it's bad, the other side says it's all their fault, when it's obviously much deeper than that. You have to understand, again, monetary policy to understand why things are going on. But Biden will still be the face of this economy, but Republicans are going to be helpless and or unwilling to actually address any of the economic issues that are about to come our way. So what happens when the Republicans, we know what the Democrats will do. See, you elected a Republican Congress and our economy went off a cliff. Most people realize it's falling off the cliff right now, so that may not be really effective, but we'll see. It would be great if the Republican Party would win power and kind of stop the record and say, all right, listen, here's what's going on. This is going to be ugly. The problem is what they would have to say is, wait a second, this is about to be ugly. There's nothing we can do about it, and it's our fault. We've done a lot of horrific things to the American economy over the last 50 years, and we're about to all have to pay the piper for it. They won't do that, of course. I haven't heard a lot of Republicans campaigning on tax cuts. Are they doing that? Because this is one of the, and I tell you, Democrats bribe you with other people's money. I'm not sure which is more pathetic. The Republicans actually bribe you with your own money. You go earn it. They let you keep 3% more of the money that you woke up, went to work, and earned, and you thank them for it. It's quite interesting. I don't know which is worse, to be honest with you. But the Republicans are going to be in power in Congress during a severe financial crisis, is my prediction. I don't know how they hold out for two more years. But I haven't heard them talk about tax cuts. But when you do tax cuts, but you don't do any spending cuts, that's just a loan from your grandchildren. And for too long, Republicans have cheered to basically take prosperity from future generations so that we can take a little bit more home in our paychecks. I believe you should be taking home 100% of your paychecks personally. And we shouldn't allow them to run up this debt in the first place. Check this number out. This is Republicans and Democrats. We've talked here endlessly, and the statistics are there. during Republican and Democrat administrations, during Republican and Democrat Congresses. They just continue to spend more and more. We're now at about $31 trillion in debt. With the average interest rate now, when the government has to go out and borrow money, average interest rate being somewhere around 4.5%, you know what that is? In interest expense, and think about this next time you see any of the old politicians who participated in this or our current crop of people, just their out-of-control spending there, they are going to need to collect $1.4 trillion in year just in interest. It's not to pay down any principal. $1.4 trillion per year as all of this government debt resets at these higher interest rates. We ran almost the entire government in 2007, 2008, one of those years, I've used it before. We ran almost the entire government on around $2 trillion about 15 years ago. Now we are at a point where we're going to have $1.4 trillion just in interest on the debt. And when you go to the grip and grin and you see Roger Wicker and take a selfie with him, shame on you for not asking him how he could participate in this. And he certainly does, as does Cindy Hyde-Smith and Michael Guest and Benny Thompson, but we don't expect anything different from the Democrats. Republicans at least lie to you. Democrats don't lie to you about this. They tell you, we're going to spend a ton of money. This is all our whole game, is to try to infantilize all of the American people and get them on the government teat so we can have power. Of course, the Democrats don't understand that's the game being run on them, but that's what they do. But the Republicans pretend. They talk about fiscal, F-I-S-C-A-L, not physical, fiscal responsibility. And yet, when they're in charge, they run up massive deficits. $1.4 trillion just on interest. Where do you think that money's going to come from? Guess what they're going to have to do? They're going to have to print up a bunch of money just to pay the interest on the debt. What happens when they print up more money? Creates inflation. Huh. It's kind of an interesting little doom loop we're entering, isn't it? The Fed is in big trouble. There's a quote here, and this is of their own making. A group called Elliott Management says, quote, the QE balances, that's quantitative easing, meaning the Federal Reserve printed up money out of thin air and went out and bought bonds to prop up the economy since 2008. That's QE. That's what it stands for. So now they've got about a $9 trillion balance sheet, I believe. This Elliott Management, which is an investment company, says the QE balances simply cannot be unwound. Now, the Federal Reserve told us, well, we're going to go out here and put all this money into the economy, but then we're going to turn right back around and take it back out. So no harm, no foul. When they tried to do that 7 or 8 years ago, it started to turn into a disaster. So they abandoned it and they just started printing up more money instead of withdrawing the money that they had put out of there in the first place in QE. They called it quantitative tightening, and it did not last long. Elliott Management says the QE balances simply cannot be unwound, and the policy response to the recession will take the $30 trillion balance to what? $50 trillion? $75 trillion? $100 trillion? Question mark. They can't undo what they did, and now they've got $9 trillion sitting on their balance sheet. They printed up $9 trillion, put it out into the economy, and they said they were going to pull it back. Now, a lot of people, particularly libertarians, were looking at this money printing going, this is going to cause a lot of inflation. And everyone went, oh, quit. We're doing fine. We tried to warn you. You didn't listen. There are a lot of good economists out there, generally Austrian economists, explaining how increasing the money supply by this amount of money was going to cause inflation. Nobody paid any attention. So they've got $9 trillion on this balance sheet. And this is what's interesting here. Okay. Here's the problem, and I have not heard anybody talking about this, and it may be, I don't know exactly how this is going to affect us. So they have $9 trillion in these bonds. A lot of them are in U.S. treasuries, and some of them are in mortgage-backed securities. All of these bonds that they bought and put on their balance sheet, they printed up money out of thin air, and they bought these bonds. Let me see if I can explain this clearly. So if they've done this for the past 15 years, while interest rates have been historic lows, a lot of these bonds, let's just say they're yielding 1%. Because they bought them at a time when buying these bonds actually suppressed interest rates. So they got them all. There's very little yield on any of these things. I'm going to try to make the math simple so the numbers will not be completely accurate, but the sentiment, the problem that they have will become apparent. So what they say is they're going to start selling these bonds, meaning they're going to sell them to somebody, the money's going to come into the Fed, and they're basically going to take it back into nothingness, withdraw it from the economy. This is to help tamp down inflation. Now, they could just hold them to maturity, and they get all their money back, but that's not what they said they're going to do. They said they're going to actually sell these things into the market to get their money back. If you have a bond, and this is what the Fed has a lot of, and again, these numbers are not completely accurate, but you'll understand what I'm saying in just a second. If you have a bond that you own and it's paying 1% and you want to sell that bond, how do you compete with other people who are selling bonds? And in this case, ironically enough, it's our own federal government that is now issuing bonds at 4.5%. Who is going to buy your bond that you only draw 1% interest a year off of? Who's going to buy that from you when they can go out into the market and find a bond that'll pay them 4%? Four times as much interest. Well, the question, the answer quite obviously is nobody. So the only way that you can sell these bonds, as the Federal Reserve has said they're going to do, the only way you can sell these bonds is you have to slash the price of these bonds to make the yield on them the same as the 4% yield that people can get out into the market. And in this case, that means that the Federal Reserve, if they have a 1% bond that they want to sell, they have to slash the price by anyone? 75%. So let's just say they printed up $1 billion to buy a bunch of these bonds, and now they want to sell them. Problem is, they're only going to be able to get back $250 million. They're going to lose 75% on each one of these bonds if they are trying to sell their 1% bonds into a 4% rate environment where people can get 4%. They've got to mark their bonds down 75%. That means this $9 trillion balance sheet is probably only worth maybe $3 trillion. And I don't know exactly how that manifests itself. I'm going to have to do some research and figure out. I can assure you the U.S. taxpayer is going to be on the hook for this in some way, shape, or form, either through increased inflation, which is just a tax that you're paying each and every day because of Republicans and Democrats and, of course, the Death Star, the Federal Reserve. But the balance sheet of the Fed, it's called mark to market, if you've ever heard this term. I told you I'm a economics nerd. And what happens is a company or in this case, a government or a central bank will have a bunch of things on their balance sheet. They consider them assets. And they just go out there and they say, look, we got $1 billion of this particular bond right here. So that's an asset. We got $1 billion. But they could never sell it for $1 billion. They could only sell it for $250 million because they'd have to discount it. But they don't realize that. Not that they don't understand it, but they just pretend like that's not the case. And so on their balance sheet, they go, look, I got $1 billion asset over here. It's like the people who bought Beanie Babies. If you went out there and you spent $1,000 on Beanie Babies at the height of the Beanie Baby bubble, well, you don't still to this day go to your banker and go, look, I've got these 6 Beanie Babies that are worth $1,000. And the banker goes, what the hell are you talking about? Nobody collects Beanie Babies anymore. If you wanted to sell those things, you'd get about $6. But on my balance sheet, I've got it right here on my financial statement that these Beanie Babies are worth $1,000, and that's part of my net worth. Your banker would look at you and laugh and say, no, they're not worth that. There might have been a time where you could have gotten that kind of money for them, but not today. And this is what the Federal Reserve has done. They've got all of this stuff, $9 trillion worth of it. And I keep saying this, but a trillion's a lot of money. A trillion seconds. Should you count to a trillion? If you made $1 a second, I think this is a good way to put it. If you made $1 a second, $60 a minute, what was it, $3,600 an hour? If you made $3,600 an hour, do you know how long it would take you to earn $1 trillion? 32,000 years. If you were earning $3,600 an hour, it would take you 32,000 years to earn $1 trillion. I think it's very hard for us to wrap our mind around this because we just hear trillion just bandied about, a $2.1 trillion deal, a $3 trillion bailout, a $1.4 trillion Inflation Reduction Act, a a $2.1 trillion pandemic relief fund. We just hear these numbers bandied about. We never stop and think about what is $1 trillion. It's a lot of money. Well, the Fed has lost a ton of it. I mean, a ton. And there are central banks. So as I say, this is a problem. I don't hear anybody really talking about it, and I don't know exactly what it means, to be completely honest with you. But I can just rest assured, it's not going to be good for us. It's not going to be good for our economy. It's not going to be good for the value of our currency. And if the value of our currency is hurt, that's just inflationary. And it means every dollar that you and I make, earn, or keep is worth a little bit less as time goes by. It'll be interesting to see. To an economics nerd like myself, I am kind of interested to see how this game plays out. We'll see. Be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I started out the show today talking about that article about wanting pandemic amnesty now. Let's just all admit we got some things wrong. And those of you that got things right, you just got lucky. So don't gloat. This was another thing of this article. And my thinking is, I don't want to hold a grudge against anybody. And I understand when I see somebody in the grocery store with a mask, it's about all I can do to not ask them about it in a kind way. But I know it wouldn't be, there's just not a good way to say, why are you still wearing that mask? What's got you trapped in that thing? Have you not seen that they don't work? I mean, I have this inner dialogue too, and I move about. I understand these people are victims. And for me, the only way there's pandemic amnesty is if the people that willingly went along with the ruling class's destruction of our society and our economy, if they admit they got duped and then get angry about it and demand that we hold the Faucis, the Thomas Dobbs, the all of them accountable. It would be nice to see Tate Reeves come out and go, you know, I didn't realize Thomas Dobbs had really lost his mind like he did. I can't believe I forced business owners in the state of Mississippi to close and then to reopen at 25% occupancy. Wouldn't it be great for Tate Reeves to come out and say, I really do apologize. I thought I was listening to a man of science. It turns out I was listening to a hysterical 12-year-old girl, Thomas Dobbs. But he won't. And so I believe that the other side, the hysterics on the side, and I don't really want to just call them the left, because I know some people on the right who lost their minds about COVID. I see them in the gym with a mask on and gloves on. And so I don't really want to say, but it was majority left. I would think that they would get angry. You know, that may be one of those things. I always am constantly reminded of how different I am than most other people. I don't know what happened to me. I did have a couple of concussions back in my sports playing days. Maybe that jiggled something loose. I've got a bump music that says maybe I'm the one. Maybe I'm the schizophrenic psycho. That's not a mistake. I like the song, but I put the words in there for a reason. There's something different about me. But when I get duped, I get angry at the duper. And they are still duping. And so just like with the pandemic stuff, we can't just move on and not hold the people accountable. It's the same thing when it comes to our financial system. And I'm tired of watching the right get duped on this. And the left and the right, both. We cannot move on. We will not rebuild anything more sound for our children until we hold the people who created this mess accountable, even if that's one of your favorite guys or gals. There's a lot of people out there on the left that really, in the media, they just hoisted Fauci up on their shoulders as he created more misery in this country, I think, than probably anybody else in history. And he's really kind of the nexus of it all. They lifted him up on their shoulder. And so it's a bitter pill to swallow when you realize, oh my gosh, I got a Fauci tattoo. And now I find out that this guy was lying to me. That he's a disease profiteer. That's a tough leap to make. And I try to give anybody that was on the hysterical side a little bit of room with grace, because I love to point out, hey, look, I've been duped on some stuff too, man. I was a Kool-Aid drinking neocon warmongering Republican throughout the 1990s. I can't believe they did that to me. But most people just cannot see this. And so the same thing with the pandemic needs to happen with our economy. You need to understand who your enemy has been. The destruction of the middle class was not one party. It was a ruling class of people who did this to us. Most people don't have a party. They have a color. It's green. It's greed. It's lust for power. This central banking system that has been facilitated by the entire political class, and I can prove that by the fact that they don't talk about it, that ruling, they can't be allowed to, after this financial crisis, rebuild our economy back in their image again. They will come up with another con. It's like letting a bunch of people lose money in a Bernie Madoff scheme, but letting him off scot-free so that he can create a new investment fund. Guaranteed 12% a year returns. We can't believe how he's doing it. But he tells us this one's going to be great. It is that in your face that the political class and the moneyed class, the donor class, has just destroyed the middle class. Trapped people in poverty and in struggle in a country that has just got so many great things going for it. If they would have gotten out of the way, if they'd done nothing, if they had done absolutely nothing, if the government and the Federal Reserve had not existed, we would be leaps and bounds above where we are now. So we cannot rebuild. We cannot just let the people who inflicted the COVID pain on us just sail off into the sunset with an oopsie. They're not even oopsieing. They're still doubling down on this stuff. Got to get your boosters. We can't let them sail off into the sunset, and we cannot. Now, there's an article. Somebody had just shared it with me, but I'd seen it before I came on air today, that they're building a 10-foot wall around the Federal Reserve. I have not fact-checked this thing. I do not know. I don't want to use that term, fact-check. That's a media term, isn't it, of gatekeeping. I have not seen if this is actually true, but there's something going around that said the Federal Reserve building has put up a 10-foot wall around it. It appears to me from the picture, and I've just seen it in a glance. It looks to be kind of one of these kind of thin barricades you can see through it. If the American people actually knew exactly what our central bank has been up to, 10 feet's not enough, and a little see-through barrier is not going to be enough. If the American people ever caught a clue as to exactly what's going on, it would need to be about 100 feet tall and a sheer 3 feet thick concrete with razor wire the entire way up to keep people from crawling across that. We should be on the Federal Reserve building like the zombies were in Israel in World War Z. Have you seen this movie? Especially terrifying, because usually zombies are so slow, but in World War Z, they were very fast. But they would go up like ants crawling up the side, crawling over the top of each other. Go take a look at World War Z. That's what it should look like around the Federal Reserve right now, if we were to realize what they have done to us. And ditto for the political class that enabled them and have enjoyed the benefits of what they have been doing for the last 100 years as they kept us in the dark about it. So these people should not sail off into the sunset. And this is why I have such a big problem with using the term Bidenflation. You're giving cover. You're actually taking this malfeasance, these horrific policies put upon us by both parties and people in the Wall Street crowd, the donor class. You're taking all of that and you're targeting right on this one geriatric mental patient, Joe Biden. And all of them are getting away with it. It's like there's... like they're holding up Biden in front of them, and you're all staring at them, and they're just, every time an arrow flies, like a criticism flies, they just let it stick to Joe Biden. I'm going to let him absorb all of the blame. He's going to be gone soon. He's already mentally gone. He's going to be gone physically from the office or from this planet in relatively short order. To think that he is going to absorb all the blame for everything that we have is just, I can't live with that. Because it is so many more people that are responsible for what we are going through right now and what's coming. So we'll see. Maybe the pain's not high enough now for people to actually spend a little time learning this stuff. We'll see. But I have a feeling people are going to want to know what's happened to this country within the next couple of years. All right, only a few minutes left in today. I want to remind everybody, next Friday, is that right? I believe it is. I'm looking at my calendar here. Yeah, that must be right. Next Friday, yeah, the 18th, November 18th. As the holidays approach, you may be doing some entertaining. You want to pick up some good food. Stonington Farm down in South Mississippi will be making another Jackson delivery of their Mississippi-born, raised, and processed, grass-fed, no hormone, no antibiotic beef. It's great tasting. And it used to be that you needed to order a whole or a half cow. Well, I think a half cow. I don't think you could order a whole cow. I don't know. Maybe they deliver you a cow. Just you can name it, pet it, do whatever you want to. But they will now allow you to just pick out some steaks, pick out some organ meats, whatever you want. Go to their site. Their site is Stonington Farm. It's S-T-O-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N. Stonington. StoningtonFarmSingular.com. You'll see everything they offer. And then there's a phone number there you are going to call. Katie Stonington, I believe she usually answers the phone there. She is one of the farmers, one of our cattle gals here in Mississippi. So you're going to get access to a local farm here. A lot of problems with supply chains. Diesel running out, you might want to know a farmer. I'm just telling you. The same for plants. Maybe I need to find a local plant farmer around here, too. We may be, you may want inside track to a local farmer in the not-too-distant future. Anyway, it's Stonington Farm. They got great prices. And as I say, the nutritional profile of this meat, being grass-fed, no hormones, no antibiotics, it is going to make you healthier. Prices are the same and oftentimes less than what you will pay in grocery stores from grain-fed sweatshop cattle from the big meat processors. So check them out, StoningtonFarm.com. Don't have a whole lot of time. I'll be honest with you. I'm hesitant sometimes to run some of these stories. Donald Trump calling Ron DeSantis Ron DeSanctimonious. He can't help himself, can he, people? The one guy who really kind of stood up for the freedom of the residents of his state. Now, I don't really want Ron DeSantis to become president because he's going to get involved in some things, particularly foreign policy, that I think he's going to wildly disappoint me on. Plus, I want a state to be able to bug out to. And Florida's a great one. So I'd like him to stay in Florida. But Donald Trump just can't help himself for tearing down the one guy, one of a handful. Kristi Noem, I'm still a little suspect on her. She still gets a lot of credit for not locking down her state, but I covered a story where people within the South Dakota legislature came out and said, Kristi Noem had an executive order written up to lock down the state, and we stopped her from doing it. And then she went out and took credit for it, and to this day, she's still given credit for being one of the freedom-loving governors. I'm a little suspicious of that, and believe me, I don't want to be suspicious of Kristi Noem because she's so darn cute. She says a lot of the right things. I'd like to think there's another good one out there. But anyway, Ron DeSantis has stood up against the machine, stood up against the machine in the schools, stood up against the medical mafia, stood up against the shutdown, lockdown, and mandate machine. But Donald Trump can't help himself but to call him sanctimonious. I'm not even sure where he gets from that. But it's a clever little quip. One of his writers told him, oh, what can we do with the name? We got to think of something funny, a funny little nickname. So I've got more on that I may take till tomorrow's show. As I say, I'm hesitant to cover these topics from time to time, but I'm not going to stop. You know, I wonder why so many people get away with what they get away with. And then I'm constantly reminded when Drudge Report runs their stats on where everybody's getting their news. And I realize, oh, that's right, that's why they get away with what they get away with, because people turn to media sources to, air quotes here in the studio, inform them. These are some of the Google News is top one, then CNN, Fox News, New York Times, Yahoo News, Drudge, which just links to everybody else, Washington Post, USA Today, New York Post, that may be the best one out there, they do some stuff too that's mainstream media-y, CNBC, BuzzFeed, Wall Street Journal, Politico. Citizens Free Press is making a run on it too, but that's an extremely partisan site. So I just look at this long list, probably one of the best ones on there if you want to actually learn things from a different perspective, is probably Zero Hedge. And it is made. I was watching Zero Hedge. I think I really got turned on to it during the financial crisis. Can't remember who told me about it originally, but as an economics nerd, it was pretty much just a financial website. They've gotten into a lot of political and foreign policy stuff now, but it was a pretty libertarian site. But they still do run stories that other people will not run. I actually liked it a little bit better when it was kind of an outpost of a ragtag bunch of individuals, and now it's gotten a tad bit partisan there. But it is Zero Hedge is something you should check it out. Zero Hedge now at 137 million page views in October. When I was there, I think it might have been 30,000 when I first started looking at that site years ago. So anyway, the problem is our mainstream media, the sources of so-called information that people are seeking is going to leave them in the dark. This is a pathetic list of propagandists. That is a real shame. I try to battle it each and every day. See you tomorrow.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.